first argument of the morning is docket number 25-1032, Slingshot Printing, LLC versus Canon USA, Incorporated. Mr. Patillo, is it?
Close. Patillo.
Patillo.
That's all right. I'm from Texas. Everyone says Patillo at first crack. So.
Whenever you're ready.
Excuse me. May it please the court. The board's finding that the 864 patent is obvious cannot stand for two reasons. One concerns a claim construction error, the other concerns a failure of proof. I'd like to begin with the second point because I think we can greatly simplify the obviousness argument. While it is technically a question of substantial evidence, that issue is actually resolved by legal doctrine. The obviousness question was whether the prior art disclosed a power trace that originates at a bond pad and separates into two traces proximal to the bond pad. Under the board's construction, which we challenged, but under the board's construction, that meant that the trace had to separate closer to the bond pad than to the end of the power trace. The board found that limitation disclosed based on Dr. Pond's annotation of Benjamin 144's figure 22. Now, if the court will indulge me, please, I think one set of images shows why the board must be reversed. If I could please ask you to turn to page 373 of the appendix. And this is from Canon's reply at the board. Now, Canon's entire case comes down to the two figures in the middle of that page. On the left is a version of annotated figure 22. The yellow is where Dr. Pond drew in a bond pad, and then Canon then drew in another orange line that it said showed the power trace from the bond pad to the crossbar where the power trace separates. On the right is Canon's obviousness argument. As you can see in the diagram and in the text below, Canon argued that because the little orange line that it drew in from the bond pad to the crossbar was shorter than the long orange lines to the end of the traces, that showed the power trace separated proximal to the bond pad. Canon's entire case...
Counsel, just take a step back. Does the dispute between the parties really about the second measuring point? Is that how you would describe the dispute between the parties?
So that is the dispute under the claim construction. The claim construction... The question was the power trace has to separate proximal to the bond pad, and proximal means nearer to, everyone agreed that it means nearer to, and the question was nearer to what? Mm-hmm. And so that was that dispute. But this particular argument I'm trying to get to make right now, and I'll happily turn to the claim construction argument, is that even if you accept the board's construction where they said that the second point of reference is the end of the trace, this is their argument. Their entire case turns on these two drawings, but the comparison fails as a matter of law because the figure on the left is not drawn to scale. This court's cases clearly hold that a patent figure that is not drawn to scale cannot legally provide competent evidence of a claim element that requires calculating distances or comparing distances. And frankly, that's the whole ballgame. Once you take away using figure 22 for distance measurements, Canon is left with nothing. The board's decision is completely unsupported. This whole appeal really is that simple. For that reason alone, the board's decision should be reversed.
I know our case law has said something about how figures and drawings and patents shouldn't be relied on for specific dimensions or something like that. But here, I think what we're looking at in this proposed modification is something a little more conceptual, and it shows how these traces, at least according to this figure, run pretty far down along the length of the heater array, and so it stands to reason that at least there's substantial evidence for the idea that that particular length exceeds the relative distance between the bond pad and the crossbar?
Well, respectfully, so what figure 22 is trying to show and what it relates to in the reference is it's a schematic and it's showing how the U-shaped firing lines can be laid out where you have one U-shape at the top, one at the bottom, so that they are shorter and don't have to run the entire length of the ink via. It can absolutely be used to understand that layout because that's what the patent is trying to teach. But Benjamin 144 generally and figure 22 in particular are not concerned about the distance from the edge of the chip where Dr. Pond drew in the bond pad, and we'll credit you, I will concede right now, that there's substantial evidence that says that the chip would be drawn along the edge of the bond pad. But figure 22 cannot be used to show the distance from the edge of the chip where the bond pad would be to the U-shaped firing line because that's not what figure 22 is concerned with, and it is not drawn to scale in this court's case.
What about responding directly to Judge Chin's question regarding the fact that it's more conceptual rather than a specific distance? So I hear and I do also understand that when it's a specific distance that is in the actual claim language, I could see why you'd be arguing to us that not drawn to scale could make a significant impact. But at least here, based on the claim language that I understand that it's in dispute, I'm not seeing that same case law leading to this as a matter of a law conclusion you're proposing.
Well, so I understand there. I mean, there is certainly a difference if a claim limitation had said this is, you know, a quarter of an inch versus three quarters of an inch. That is different in the sense that a specific dimension is given, but it's no different conceptually because the whole point is you are still required to measure relative distances. And the whole definition of not to scale means don't use this map to understand distances. I don't know how long it's been since your honors have ridden the metro, but, you know, the ubiquitous map of the metro that's not drawn to scale. Their argument is essentially like looking at the metro map and saying, oh, well, look, because I can see these two dots here.
Well, if that was your case, why didn't – that sounds to me like you're saying that the expert opinion is unreliable because it used assumptions about the drawings that rendered it unreliable. But this isn't phrased as a challenge to the expert's opinion. This is phrased as a – challenge to what the drawing shows, and the expert said the drawing shows enough to figure out that it meets the proximal limitation. And if we accept that expert's opinion, then that's substantial evidence, isn't it?
Absolutely not. Honestly, I think that if you look at what Dr. Pond actually had to say.
Did you challenge the expert's reliability?
I don't think in the sense of like a Daubert challenge. No, we didn't challenge his bona fides. We didn't challenge his qualifications to issue an opinion, but
you have to challenge more. I mean, at least I know our eco factor case applies to damages, but I think you would take more broadly from that if you want to challenge the expert's opinion and get it thrown out, you need to challenge the facts. If it's based on unreliable facts, then you need to challenge that.
But we did. We very clearly argued this issue below, and certainly Canada's not made a waiver argument because we very clearly challenged his factual opinions, and we said you cannot.
I get that, but if the board accepted his opinion and his analysis of this schematic, then why isn't that a substantial evidence question and not as a matter of law question?
Well, I think if we look to the Nystrom case, this was a case about scale, and it said, patent drawings cannot be the basis for challenging the validity of claims reciting specific dimensions not disclosed directly in such prior art.
I think Judge Cunningham just alluded to this. This is a difference between specific dimensions versus comparisons. This is just a comparison. One side has to be shorter than the other side. Do you have cases that said we can't even use it for that comparison?
It is well, we have the general principle, and to go back to your point real quick about why it's not substantial evidence. If you look in Nystrom, it was a district court case, but it didn't say there was a failure of proof under evidence. It said the district court erred in not properly applying the principles set forth in our precedents that arguments made based on drawings not explicitly made to scale in the petition, in the issued patents are unavailing. It's a principle of law. It's just saying as a matter of law, this evidence is legally incompetent. And respectfully, you just can't make comparisons about things that are not drawn to scale. It's like I give you.
Let's just take a look at this figure again. I mean, especially when you look at the figure on A372, What you see here conceptually are heater arrays and an ink via that essentially is running the length of the substrate of the chip. And then you see the power traces in these U-shaped configurations that are ending pretty close to the center of the chip. And then it just stands to reason that because these heater arrays and ink vias are running the length of the substrate, then the edges of the chip where the bond pads would be would certainly be a shorter distance to the ends of those heater arrays and ink vias than the centers of those ink vias and heater arrays.
But simply speaking, the
ends of those traces that turn into a crossbar are, there's just a shorter distance to the bond pad than compared to the length of the power traces.
I think the difficulty is with the point conceptually speaking. This is the concept, this is a concept from the edge of the chip to the fire line to the crossbar.
Did your expert say something like, no, these figures are somehow distorted? You would never have the heater arrays and power traces this long along the length of the chip like this. They would be much stubbier, and so therefore the distance between the edge of the chip all the way to the crossbar of the power traces would be much longer than what's being shown here in this figure.
I don't think he gave that testimony specifically, but Dr. Pond also did not say... and they have the burden of proof. We don't have the burden of proof. He had to come forward with legally competent evidence, legally sufficient evidence, and he just said, I'm going to put a bunch of drawings, not to scale drawings together, and I'm going to tell you that this is what it shows. He did not say that in a chip, you know, it is usually much closer. Skilled artisans would understand. He didn't say anything like that. He just based it on this. And so conceptually, this figure is not trying to show the concept of the distance from the edge of the chip to the bond pad. And I think the law is very clear that you just can't use not to scale. It's like coming in with a yardstick that says
this is six inches.
But
back to your Nystrom case, in that particular case, which I went back and looked up the claim while you were chatting here, it talked about thickness to the width of the board being about 1 to 40. In this particular case, it is talking about some actual measurements in the claim limitation itself, which to me is distinguishable from what we've been talking about here in terms of the conceptual comparison.
So I agree with you. It is different. I do not think it is legally distinguishable. I don't think it is meaningfully distinguishable. If you are trying to compare distances on a map that doesn't purport to compare distances, the concept is just not illustrated. To take you back, I don't know if you recall those posters at a tourist trap in New York where it says a New Yorker's view of the world. And this much of the poster is the Statue of Liberty and, you know, from one side of Manhattan to the other. And it looks this big on the poster and the rest of America
is
this big. Is there
a difference between not being to scale and not being proportional?
I believe the definition of not to scale. I mean, there might be some ways in which they are different, but if it is not to scale, you cannot derive proportions. It does not purport to show proportionality.
You're deep into your rebuttal. Do you want to save your remaining
time? Yes, I would, John. I'm sorry.
Let's hear from the other side.
May it please the court. Under the board's construction, substantial evidence supports the board's finding that Benjamin 144 and Benjamin 703 render the challenge claims obvious. I heard only argument about one issue, which is whether or not the combination of those references show under the board's construction that the split in the traces occurs proximal to the bond pad. Now,
you agree that patent drawings are not the same as engineering drawings, right?
Absolutely.
That they are simplified versions of the real thing. And in that way, they're kind of like abstractions.
I agree that patent drawings are not engineering drawings and are simplifications. Yes, Your Honor.
So in these simplified versions of the real thing, how can we have any confidence that, you know, when you choose to color in an area and designate that colored area as a bond pad, that we can know that that distance to the power traces splitting off is shorter than the length of the power trace that's running along a heater array?
So, Your Honor, we have expert testimony that was credited by the board on this issue, and I heard some challenges to that testimony and that it was unreliable and legally incompetent, but as Your Honors know, expert credibility determinations are virtually unreviewable on appeal. And Dr. Bond credibly testified how a skilled artisan would look at the drawing and at least be able to glean the fact that the split occurs proximal to the bond pad under the board's construction. That testimony was credited. He didn't, this isn't a case like Cripples or Nyquist where, or Nystorm, sorry, where the, where he's taking a very specific measurement. He's just looking at it and getting the relative proportions, and as Judge Cunningham noted in her questioning of opposing counsel, that is a distinguishable characteristic. I'll point the court to the In re Mraz and In re Wolfson Springer cases, which were cited by the board on appendix page 37, where the board explained that getting the relative proportions from a drawing is something that a skilled artisan can glean, even from an a drawing that is not to scale. So the board considered these arguments and it made its credibility determination. It didn't go so far as it was in the Cripples case to try to glean specific angles from a drawing. It just said the testimony from Dr. Pond that a skilled artisan would be able to look at this drawing and understand that the split occurs proximal to the bond pad because the wire continues significantly longer through the heater arrays is credible testimony, and the court relied.
Dr. Pond rely on anything else than what I could do by just looking at this picture and then just sort of eyeballing and saying, well, you know, that distance A is shorter than what I will call distance B.
So the glass that Dr. Pond could provide is he's looking at the drawing from the perspective of a skilled artisan. And so his testimony was a little bit more than that than a layperson because he said a skilled artisan would look at that and take that away as a teaching of the reference. So he did provide more than just a layperson's testimony on that, just based on his experience and skill. And as Judge Hughes noted, they didn't challenge that below, that he could provide valuable, useful expert testimony. They didn't make a Daubert challenge that he was unqualified or that the basis of his opinions was unreliable.
Okay, but it's fair to say that he didn't offer any underlying reasoning beyond saying that based on his, I don't know, experience as a skilled artisan, he looks at this picture in a particular way, period.
I think he provided in his deposition testimony effectively that level of testimony because he wasn't asked further as to why, but he did explain that he, a skilled artisan, can get relative proportions from drawings, and there's just not much of a difference, I think, between that and maybe a layperson that could also look at this, so there wasn't much more to add there.
Can you kind of catalog for us, counsel, what would be all the substantial evidence support for having these two references rendering obvious these claims of the 864?
Sure. So we have Dr. Pond's testimony that we've already discussed. We would also look, for example, at I think the other figures are informative. For example, the prior art figure 1 shows the fact that these traces continue through the heater array. This is figure 1 of the patent. And it shows that the trace...
The appendix page for me?
Yeah, that would be... Appendix page 44. Now, this record support would just be to show the fact that after leaving the bond pad, the trace continues through the heater array, something that was disputed a little bit in the briefs, but I didn't hear argument about. But that actually supports the same finding because it shows that the trace continues longer through the heater array, which is something, again, that Dr. Pond also testified to extensively. We also see in the next prior art figure, again, figure 2 on appendix page 45, that same concept in the patent, that the trace will continue longer. And then if we go back to Benjamin's own figures, we see that in figure 22, which is showing that its traces continue through the fire lines. And that would be as well on appendix page 882.
You just said that these figures show the power traces going through the heater array, but obviously, visually speaking, the lines are running alongside the heater array, just based on the figure. What's actually going on here?
So we have expert testimony.
Is the array, the trace actually going physically through and inside the heater array? Or is it perhaps on a different layer of the substrate and then running underneath the heater array or above the heater array layer? Or is it as it's shown in the figures, which is a trace that's running very closely alongside of the heater array, but not actually inside the heater array or underneath the heater array or above the heater array?
So we have expert testimony from Mr. Deedle on appendix page 1266, where he was asked about the additional length of the power trace after the first heater array. And he explained at that point that that could just be, in his opinion, disregarded. But he didn't say that that was a trace.
What could be disregarded when you say it can be disregarded?
The additional trace that runs through the heater array. He didn't say that's not. He didn't correct the premise of the question and say there is no additional trace that runs through the heater array after it meets the heater array. And then Dr. Pond also testified the same, that
I'm just trying to understand what these figures are showing. Your view is that the power trace isn't actually running alongside the heater array, right? Even though that's what's actually literally depicted in the figures.
Right. And that's because of the expert testimony about the fact that the point of these figures is showing that the heater arrays have to be powered. And we see that in the other heater arrays in these same figures, the arrow hitting the heater array. But then we see the line running through it. If you also look at Benjamin's 144's figure 22, it depicts the same thing. It's
right,
got a trace.
It depicts the trace running alongside the heater array again. And so
yes,
it's a little confusing as to what's actually happening.
Yes, and that's why the expert testimony comes in, and it's undisputed that those traces run through the heater arrays. We've got that from Mr. Deedle's testimony as well as Dr. Pond. There was an issue on claim construction that wasn't raised during oral argument but was raised in the briefs about whether or not that trace should be considered, whether or not it's relevant for the analysis, but there was no dispute that that trace exists based on the expert testimony. Your Honors, there are other issues that were raised about claim construction, about the Board's treatment of unchallenged limitations. I'm happy to address them if you have any other questions. But otherwise, I'm happy to return the rest of my time. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Let's hear from the appellant, and we'll give him 2.5 minutes. Oh, you can make it 3 if you want.
That's very generous, Your Honor. Thank you very much. Try and speak as quickly as I can while still being intelligible. So just real quick to address the point about credibility determinations. Credibility determinations are essentially irrelevant when you have an expert talking about legally insufficient evidence. And so whatever he had to say about that, if your case law says as a matter of law that you cannot use these to scale for this purpose, it really doesn't matter what he said. And the fact that he said, I as a skilled artisan would look at it that way, he did not actually provide any testimony that skilled artisans would know that when you're actually making a chip, this is a huge distance. And so all of the talk about whatever the figures show about the length of the power traces is irrelevant because there's still nothing, you still don't have the other side of the comparator.
Rely on the drawings and the patent. How could you ever prove that prior art showed some kind of size or ratio?
Well, you'd have to find some art that actually, if the size matters to the invention, and if it is in fact something that renders it obvious, then someone would have discussed it.
As this side is smaller than this side?
Absolutely. This is not.
I don't think our case law says that.
If you're trying to draw.
Write to me a sentence in those cases that says, drawings can never be relied on for any kind of size measurement, not specific size measurements.
I mean, it's very, very close when you look at what Nystrom has, or Hockerson-Halberstadt, which we cite. It is well established that patent drawings do not define the precise proportions of the elements and may not be relied on to show particular
what
size.
What claim element was it trying to be shown to be there? Was it precise measurements?
No, it was respective widths of grooves and fins on tennis shoes. It was not a precise width. It was saying, oh, well, if you look at what this is, it's a relevant comparison. It's exactly the same. And if you look at Nystrom, the law is very clear. Speculative modeling premised on unstated assumptions in patent drawings cannot be the basis for challenging claims or citing specific dimensions not specifically disclosed in the prior art. But be that as it may, I'd like to move on to one thing, because they said six times in their brief that Mr. Dietl made a concession about whether the power traces continue within the heater arrays. I would ask you to turn to 1266. They say he testified this, he confirmed, he explained that. He said no such thing. He was asked. The specific question was, for consideration of the term physically separated proximal to the bond pad, he wasn't asked about, in a chip, how far do these continue? Do they continue within the heater array? He said, for purposes of this term, what does that mean? And, you know, we would disregard any length of the power trace after the first heater array, right? And he says, yes, I believe that's important. That's right. So counsel's question included the assumption that there was. And Mr. Dietl's only statement was, well, if there is any in there, we would disregard it for purposes of the claim term. And so that is only relevant to the claim construction issue, which we did not discuss today. But the idea that Mr. Dietl conceded their argument that it actually continues within the array is simply not true. And I encourage you to spend some time with appendix page 1266.
Where's the part where it says if there's anything in there? So I turned to page 1266 like you asked. I just want to know where you're reading from where it says if there's anything in there.
I'm sorry, I was trying to speak quickly, but if we look at this, so the question is.
I'd rather have you be precise than speaking quickly.
So he says, so for purposes, for consideration of the term physically separated proximal to the bond pad, we disregard any additional length of the power trace after the first heater array. So that is assuming the way he's asking the question is if there is any, then you would disregard that under your interpretation, correct? And he's agreeing. And we completely agree, because that is our position, is that whether the trace continues into the heater arrays is completely irrelevant to the claim construction question, because the claim is only whether or not it continues, the claim is only concerned with the portion of the trace between the bond pad and the heater array. And so whether or not it continues has no bearing on the claim construction issue. But if you were to get into the factual dispute, the notion that the board never made a factual finding that it does continue, and our experts certainly did not make a concession on that point.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Case is submitted.